go talk to the Tigers' new skipper. A.J. Hinch is standing by here on the Huge Show across Michigan. Welcome in, A.J.
Thank you for having me. It's nice to be working in Michigan and getting the Tigers heading in the right direction.
Yeah, and I told everybody on the day you got hired that I go back to my days calling Bomber football, Midwest City High, KTOK. You had just graduated. You were off to Stanford to play college baseball. And I had a chance to meet some of your family members and also Coach Huggins. And right there in the shadows of Tinker Air Force Base, I called Bomber football for a couple of years on KTOK in Oklahoma City.
I love that throwback. And I mean, in Oklahoma, I grew up in Oklahoma, and it's similar to the love of football in Michigan. If you don't play football in Oklahoma, you kind of can't leave the house for an entire football season. So I had a good time. I was a quarterback for a few years, and we had a lot of guys go Division I out of football, and luckily escaped without injury. Ended up staying in baseball, but my time there, you know, chasing around the football a little bit, throwing a few touchdowns, scoring a couple plays, an unbelievable experience. And what a small world it is to connect us again.
Yeah, I remember your mom would come up to me and tell me about the career you had and how good of a baseball player you were, and Coach Huggins and everybody, man. The Midwest City, Dell City rivalry was just amazing. Yeah. And just a wonderful journey where I started. That was the year 92 when you graduated from high school. That's why all of a sudden when I looked at your resume, I saw your age, your baseball career from Stanford to playing in the pros to where you've worked after your playing days to where you are now. It made me feel pretty damn old.
I know. You know, well, I'll tell you this. My experience in Houston, when I started, you know, kind of getting younger players, very similar to the Tigers, where there's some 21-year-olds, a couple 22-year-olds, 23-year-olds, and, you know, I have an 18-year-old daughter and a 16-year-old daughter, and I'm like, and I never would have thought I was going to have kids the same age as players that I was working with. So I'm feeling a little bit older, even though I'm a young manager of 46, but those that covered me or those that I played with or those that coached me have to look at themselves a little bit and say, you know, unfortunately, Father Time wins all the time. You know, we just keep getting older and older as we go.
You know, AJ, when I go through your resume and preparing for this interview, that you had the perfect sports career. You know, you mentioned Midwest City, being a former quarterback, going to Stanford and turning down getting drafted, I think, a couple of times to still play at Stanford, and a great education. And then I look at your managing career, your front office career, and there's that 1 year with the Astros and that cheating scandal, and it's the only blemish on your resume.
Yeah, no, and it's a big one, and I understand, you know, why it's a topic, and it's something that's going to stick with me, and it bothers me because of how wrong it was, and ultimately, you know, I think the positives, you know, outweigh the negative, but the negative should never get too distant in your memory. I think you have to learn from your mistakes. I served a suspension. I've had an incredible run in baseball. I've held almost every job that you can hold when it comes to front office or player or manager, and was even an interim GM for a short period of time in San Diego. It's incredible what this sport has afforded me, and I think that's what I really missed when I served my suspension, is just how wonderful the game is. And those experiences, I think, can help the players with the Tigers. I think we can, you know, those, you know, good and bad. I think you have to share all of your experiences, but I'm proud of what I've done in my entire career. Obviously, I'm not proud of what went on in 2017 under my watch. And I vowed to Mr. Ilitch and Al and certainly all the fans that there's going to be good times ahead for Detroit. And we're going to, you know, I'm going to distance myself from 2017 with every opportunity that I can. But I'm never going to lose sight of how wrong it was and how much of a better leader that I need to be moving forward.
You know, I love the way you've handled this head on, and it's the right thing to do to kind of not move on, but let people know you're willing to be honest. The one thing, AJ, when I was listening to your introduction to the Tiger fan base and the media last week, is that when that cheating was going on, and you look back and you talk about learning from this, do you ever ask yourself why you allowed it to continue?
Oh, I ask myself all the time. I mean, I had a whole year suspension where I'm asking myself, and, you know, I guess, like I said, I got teenage daughters that I had to explain, you know, what went wrong and when it went wrong, and I wish I had a better answer as to how it all kind of came about. I don't think it was as sophisticated as people may think. I don't think that it was something that evolved over time, and then you looked up and we were going way too fast down a street that became uncontrollable. So it's regrettable. I ask myself all the time, like, where the off ramps were, where you could turn the car around and go a different direction, get out of that mess. But the key for me is own it. It was on my watch. I'm embarrassed that I have to talk about it, for the future. And it takes away a little bit of what good is going on in Detroit, because the story has been a little bit about me. And I want the story to be about the players, which is why I've talked about how it being my story and not the Tiger story. And unfortunately, it happened, and it's something that'll never happen again. And it's something that I take seriously about, where were the off ramps and what do I need to do to be a better leader?
Yeah, and I think by people knowing more about it from the heart, from you, AJ, will help not diminish what happened, but help everybody just move on. And the timing's good here, because you don't have your season starting until spring training in February in Lakeland. And I would guess, like any of us who make a mistake, you look back and you just tell yourself, man, I should have told the team, we're going to stop this, guys. We're better than this, and we're going to move forward. We can win this World Series. We can win any playoff game without any form of cheating. And that's probably what you were thinking and do think about today.
Yeah, no question. I don't necessarily need people to forget it. I think forgiveness is the hardest thing to ask for, but you have to go out and earn it. And my goal with our players, my goal with the front office, the fans, is going to be just watch us work, give us a chance, understanding that doesn't take away the severity of what went on and the tag that's on my back and on the back of my baseball card is something that happened on my watch. But I am going to try to get the focus on the players and the excitement of what we're building with Detroit and all the positivity that comes with it. And I've got so much work to do that I do have to focus forward. I do have to look in the, in the analogy, look out the windshield, not the rearview mirror. But those lessons learned are very heartfelt. I'm going to be very open and honest and regretful for what any story that gets tagged along with my new franchise. But I'm so proud to be here. I'm very fortunate to get another opportunity, and I will earn the trust and respect of people that follow Tiger baseball.
Beyond just getting another chance to manage in the big leagues with the Tigers, what was the appeal for you to choose this destination when Al Avila offered the job?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was really happy when Al, he looked me right in the eye and he said, "You're my guy, and I want to build this the right way with you." And I think it starts with the players. The last few years with the Tigers, it's been a very difficult time for the fans to watch, the rebuild and watch it go from the wonderful mid 2000s years in late 2000s years when you're looking at a rotation that had big names in it, future Hall of Famers. You have a Miguel Cabrera in his prime. You have offense, up and down the lineup. You have a shutdown bullpen, and you're making playoff appearances, and that's what we want to get back to. And I think when you look at this and you see the influx of young talent is real, I think you have a committed ownership. And Chris Illich has been unbelievable in explaining to me his blueprint on how he wants to build a sustained winner. And the family's done it before. They'll do it again. And that type of commitment to winning from ownership, the young players that have been established, another high draft pick coming this year where you get a top five draft pick and you can get a really impact player to add to this mix. I love building things. I love player development. I love going from point A to point B. I did it once in 2015 with the Astros. We had a team coming off of a lot of losses, and we went on a sustained run of success with some young players. And that's exciting to look forward to. It's a big challenge, and you got to get a lot of things right. You got to get a little lucky. You also got to make some key decisions on coaches and players and acquisitions and things of that nature. But it's a big opportunity for me, not just to get back in the dugout, but get back in the dugout where you can make a real impact and take an organization and raise the bar a little bit and move the organization forward.
AJ Hinch, new manager of your Detroit Tigers, joining us here on the Huge Show across Michigan. You mentioned in the press conference last week that you watched a lot of baseball. You had a chance just to be a fan. You had the year of suspension, a lot of family time, even made a trip to Traverse City. Before Al Avila called you 30 minutes after the World Series ended, What was your impression on the Tigers in terms of talent and how far away they looked from your conversation with other people inside baseball and whatever you could look into online or in person or on TV when watching the Tigers?
So my view of the Tigers before, you know, before even knowing there was going to be an opportunity was just the anticipation of the young pitching getting there, some of the young position players. I've watched Spencer Torkelson play before, so the anticipation for him is going to be really big. So when he gets to get to the big leagues, but I think that the building part of it, when you've been around baseball as long as I have, you see the investments that go into the young players, and all of a sudden here comes Casey Mize and Tarek Skubal, and Manning's going to be right behind them, and you're combining that with, you know, we got to get Matt Boyd back on track, and then all of a sudden here comes Willy Castro, a young infielder, and Candelario has a little bit of a breakout, and Nico is playing incredible defense, almost won a Gold Glove. There's a lot to that. As the build starts, now it's a matter of how much can you add to the recipe, both on the coaching staff or in the manager's chair, but more importantly in the player pool. And so watching them, you kind of see where the foundation's being laid, in the analogy of a house, and you see that you're pouring the foundation, you're starting to put some of the house, the 2x4s are going up, and that you just don't know what it's going to be like who's going to be the breakout star, what name that we're not talking about or kind of you know, extending in the media, like who somebody's going to surprise you, and that those are things when you look at prospect number 10 or prospect number 12 or prospect number 15, somebody's going to step up and surprise you. But the talent, you could see, it's exciting. You know, the exciting part of having the top of the draft picks are not the losing seasons, it's when they get to the big league and all of a sudden can start making impact, and you realize that the amount of talent that you've acquired over those down years. Then you got to start talking about winning and press the accelerator, and that timeline's hard to predict. Like, I don't know how much better we're going to be until we have our team on the field. I do know our attitude shift is going to change, given that, you know, I've had a winning background. I certainly have lofty goals. We got to start talking about playing winning baseball and not talk about losing records. That's going to start to increase some enthusiasm with the players and set the bar pretty high.
From when you were fired by the Diamondbacks in July of 2010 to when you came back as a manager in late September 2014, replacing Bo Porter with the Astros, and then what you were able to do in terms of working with a franchise that was in a similar position, taking a great farm system, mixing it with veterans like Justin Verlander, which we'll talk about in a moment. But what did you learn from, you know, because everyone talks about learning something when they're fired, and most people will come back in a better position. What did you learn from getting shown the door by the D-backs to the success you had as a manager with the Astros?
Yeah, good question. And I think the key in that was that the league was not, or the industry was not necessarily ready for what was happening with the modern day, how to reach modern day players, how to, you know, now the managing seat was getting a little bit younger. You know, when I took over in Arizona and I looked across the dugout, you know, I saw, you know, ironically, two managers that are in the game now, Dusty Baker and Tony La Russa, Tito Gaston and Bobby Cox and Jim Leland, like name the historic names in the manager's chair. You know, when you take your picture at the winter meetings, and I looked at the picture and I'm like, man, I look like I'm 12 years old compared to what a normal manager would look like. And so when I got let go in Arizona, I knew we were on the right track of how we were going to bring the front offices and the field together. Analytics were starting to play more and more into more of an open topic as opposed to a hidden topic. The player, the path of the player from the lower minor league to the big leagues was getting shorter and shorter. You saw 19-year-olds and 20-year-olds start to make their major league debuts. And so that, how to piece it all together, took experience for me to learn how to do that and how to run a team and how to run an identity on the field that matches what the front office is doing, you know, behind the scenes. And so you gain confidence with experience, whether it's good experience or bad experience. You gain, you know, a little bit of knowledge on, you have some pitfalls along the way, you have some successes. I had to do a lot of things for the first time in Arizona, whether it's address a team or you know, interact with a guy getting a long-term deal, interact with a guy that wants a long-term deal who doesn't get it, and guys getting traded, guys getting released. Things on the field that experience will give you the wisdom how to handle it better the next time. And all of those lessons, you know, paid off in Houston when I took over there and had some of the same goals of bridging the gap between, you know, management and the players and ultimately bringing the best team on the field. And that to me is something that's second to none when you get that kind of experience. And nobody likes getting fired, you know, at all and moving on. But the lessons learned were pivotal to me being a good manager in Houston.
If you had to evaluate yourself, your own self-analyzation, analytics, call it what you will, what is the strength of A.J. Hinch that you think helps the Tigers from day one when you get together with your team, if not before, when working with the front office on setting up the future?
Mm-hmm. I think one of my top qualities would be that I can develop relationships, you know, and I think it's helped me throughout the game and the different jobs that I've had. It certainly has gained me more friends that want to be Tiger coaches right now than ever before. My phone is blowing up left and right on people that want to come and help, and that starts and ends with relationships. You have to build those, and then when you think about dealing with players, my job as the manager is to get the most out of these players. So I have to have a personal connection to Matt Boyd and Joe Jimenez and Candelario and Paredes, who's a young kid who's getting up to the big leagues. Those are key in relationships. They have to be individual. I have to know something about the person. I do think you develop the person first and the player second. And that to me is something that I feel very confident about that I can do. And if you talk to former players that played for me, it's something that I invest deeply in. In the game management side of it, I think that my strength is that I'm not afraid to try anything. You know, I don't really have one philosophy other than I try to manage to win. And that might be, you know, do you stick with your starter? Do you use your bullpen a lot? Do you platoon? Do you pinch hit? Do you bunt, hit and run? There are some things that I do, you know, less than others. I don't bunt a ton. I don't intentionally walk a ton, the game, unless the game dictates it. But I am not afraid to try anything. And I'm not afraid to move players around the field and have them play multiple positions, which is why I'm so excited to work with a player like Nico Goodrum. I mean, he can do a lot of different things around the field. We got to get his offense straightened out. But his ability to play a lot of different positions, I think, will be maximized under a manager like me. And if I'm willing to do different things to try to win the games, to me, that's a strength for the players in maximizing their potential and bringing out the best version of themselves. I think it's a good match.
Do you think, whether it's postseason, I see a lot of MLB managers overmanage in the postseason because there's a lot of pressure that none of us know how to deal with unless we're sitting there on the bench in the dugout or leaning up against the fence with them. But do you think at times you have overmanaged in the past, or you're a guy that kind of lets the players, when they understand expectations, go do their thing?
Well, I don't really use the term overmanage. I think that's a difficult one, because I will tell you, watching the playoffs this year, it's way easier to manage on the couch than it is on the top step.
Right.
It's not easy when you're on the field. I think most people bring up overmanaging whenever the decision that you make fails. If you succeed, nobody ever accuses somebody that makes seven pitching moves, maybe a few pinch hits, you start runners, you don't, you max, you play small ball, you play big ball. But it all works out. We never criticize the manager for overmanaging. We say he's a tactician and he did a good job. So failure will make people say a lot of different things. I certainly think that if you have a good decision-making process in your mind, you go with your gut sometimes, you go with the numbers quite a few times, there's going to be a nice balance, I think, what you find with me. But you know, I've been through, you know, two Game 7s in the World Series. We got to the ALCS in 18. We made the playoffs in 15. I've managed 50 playoff games. You know, I just don't subscribe to the theory that you overmanage when you fail and you're a perfect manager when you succeed. You have to go with what you think's best to put your team into being successful. I know that the microscope is all over the pitching decisions. And, you know, I can joke with Kevin Cash about him pulling Blake Snell because I pulled Zach Greinke in 2019. If you make the move and it works, it's brilliant. And if you make the move and it doesn't, you overmanage. That's probably a little unfair of the position and some of the things that we put into the job to make as good of decisions as we can.
Hey, AJ, I just love the way you've owned the cheating scandal. You've owned that being a manager, you got to make the moves and you take the good with the bad and you take the arrows. Like pulling a Snell in a World Series game, and you live with it, but then people forget all the good things you did to get to that point. So that's the balance we have in modern-day sports between people like me and the media and those couch managers all on their Twitter, Facebook, and DraftKings account wondering why Snell's still not in there to help them win their one-day fantasy game.
What's interesting about that, this is what makes sports great.
Like, yeah, I love
the second-guessing and third-guessing and what I would do or what I couldn't do. Like, I do it watching sports all the time, and I welcome people to have the debates about it. And you know, I'm going with the best information that I have, and what I, you know, I might have a little more information than somebody at home, or sometimes I'm in, you know, I make a dumb decision. I mean, it's part of the human element of the game that you hope to avoid when it comes to making bad decisions, but that's what makes sports great. And I think ask away, like, trust me, by the time I get to the podium after a game where you make a tough decision, or maybe you hit for somebody and it didn't work, or maybe you pulled a starter in the sixth inning and he was cruising, I've already second and third guessed myself, so nothing can really come up that I haven't already done myself. I beat myself up as much as anyone. It's not a perfect decision, but that's what makes sports great. So I think people that are invested so much to care about it continue watching the game, continue second guessing, and but do trust that we're putting the work in to make the best decisions we can.
Yeah, and you'll be second guessing me, and you'll be hosting the show from your car when you're listening on AM 1270. Once you get settled in Detroit, weekdays 3 until 6, you'll go, my God, why did he say that? Why did he say that? The analytics said, don't say that right there. Save that for the end of the hour. Bill, it's AJ. Why did you say that? You just ruined the hour.
That's right.
Yeah, buddy.
You know what? I'll just tell you, be better. We all want to be better.
Yeah.
I'll make, you know, make better comments. I'll make better decisions.
Yeah, I love it. AJ, welcome to Detroit. Welcome to the state of Michigan. And away from your family, which you had some incredible time with the suspension. And one thing I'll say about you as a manager, that the Houston Astros players weren't suspended, and you as their manager, you showed your leadership when you were suspended and had to sit out, and those players didn't have to, and you get rewarded after the suspension, becoming the new manager of the Tigers. So that shows that you're willing to take one for your team and for your players and the organization. On the brighter side, away from your family, away from baseball, what's your escape? What is it?
More baseball. I don't really have an escape, but during the season, obviously in the off season, I'm down in Houston. We have good weather. I play a little bit of golf. I got a great little friend group. I'm a reality TV enthusiast. So I try, but I'm a baseball nut. So I'm usually somewhere engaged in sports, somewhere engaged in the, you know, whether it's PGA Tour, the NFL, NCAA, I'm pretty locked in on sports. Probably as much as you are, and you have to be pretty prepared to do this show. So I love following everything sports, and an occasional vacation getaway with my wife Erin and my daughters, and decompress for a little bit, but don't decompress for long because I'm probably missing a game.
Amen. Before I let you go, your golf handicap on the decent tees at a decent course.
I unfortunately for me, I had a lot of time off, but I've gotten it down to a seven
good
handicap, which is not PGA Tour quality. I would be intimidated if I got around any of the big boys, but kind of aim for par, make a few bogeys, try not to have an implosion hole, and then rinse and repeat.
Just be good enough to beat your friends. That's all.
That's right.
That's all.
That's
every
right.
Day, be good enough to beat your friends. That's the number one goal I tell everybody in golf. And then you mentioned reality TV. As we say goodbye, your go-to current TV show that AJ Hinch can't get enough of.
So I probably haven't missed a season of Survivor, and I always told myself that I was going to go on it, and then they have to live outside for 30 days or whatever it is. They got to eat crazy stuff. They got a little bit too many physical things on the show that I probably can't do at my age now. But 18, 20 years of being a family show for me and my wife and my girls, and we lock in every season Survivor's on.
We should get a bunch of older, because I'm like 10 years older than you. We should get a bunch of older guys like Beer Gut Survivor. That would be
that's right.
Yeah, Survivor Dads. So the dad edition. That would be awesome. AJ, congrats on getting another chance in the big leagues with the Tigers. Good to have you here in Michigan. Looking forward to seeing the team grow in 2021 and beyond.
Awesome. Thanks. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, AJ Hinch joining us on the DraftKings Guest Line.